You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Tell you a cool VA story. Yeah, because the VA does take a lot of shit, and I give them shit too. So let me tell you a good VA story about the Long Beach VA. Oh, by the way, good morning. I forgot to say that. On Friday, the 17th day of April, right? The world seems better today. Hearing people talk about reopening the country, just the discussion of it in a serious way, which I think might be a bit overdue, was good. But let me tell you about my trip to the VA. So about a week ago, I was on the phone while I was running on my treadmill. And so the way I do this is I set the treadmill to like 8 or 9 miles an hour, so it's going fast, and then I hop on it and I sprint. So when I went to hop off, because I was a little bit distracted by my phone call, I slipped. So my left foot went to the end of the treadmill on the ground, and the belt, right, sizzled the side of my left leg for a second or two, right? So essentially got a burn. Well, the burn's infected. Yeah. And so I'm no, you know, infections in the Marine Corps are like the way we do it. So I'm not telling you that I'm a specialist at infectious disease. I could qualify as moderately proficient in just infections, skin infections on the lower extremities in particular. Well, even on the upper extremities. So, because of knives and shit like that. So anyway, I've been watching this thing, right? So I'm looking for, right, pink traces that, you know, that start moving away from the infection. And there's been none. But it's lingered for longer than I care. So it got my attention. And so I was at my ex-wife's house on Sunday having dinner with Colleen and Catherine and Susan. And so I said, hey, do you have any penicillin or amoxicillin or any antibiotic? So she looked and she goes, I have some, but it's expired in 2014. I said, that'll do. So I went online and I looked like, what happens if you take an expired drug? And they said, so I read a number of articles. My takeaway from all that was, okay, that it's probably going to be ineffective because the dose is going to be lower dose because it's, you know, it's years out of date. So I took it and didn't really help. Surprise. And so yesterday I thought, I also was told by my former sister-in-law, she said, are you putting anything on it? I said, well, yeah, Neosporin. She said, get something called Bacitracin, Bacitracin. It's stronger than Neosporin. So I did that, right? So I'm putting, and so So now all that sets up the VA store. So yesterday I'm doing that, and it's not right. It looks better to me today, yesterday, a little bit. But I thought, you know what, this is too long. Let me just call the VA and see if I can call them and get them to prescribe, you know, some kind of antibiotic. And, you know, and who knows, maybe they can call that into a local pharmacy and I can go pick it up. The Long Beach VA is in Long Beach, which is about 21 minutes for me on Google Maps. So here's what I did. So I pick up the phone. Actually, I go onto My Health, which is a VA website, right? And if you do health stuff with the VA, you have an account on My Health, and you can see prescriptions, you can see appointments, you can change appointments, you can email people, stuff like that. So I go on that, I get the phone number, I call, and I get routed to somebody. They take my information. Guy kind of irritated me. He asked me the same question. I swear to God, he asked me 9 times. And I'm like, dude, I already answered that question. And he's like, I'm sorry, I just have to fill out the form. I'm like, all right, I'm sorry. And so, so then I get a call back from a nurse practitioner. And she talks to me, and she asks me a lot of the same questions. And then she says, okay, she says, we'll get you a prescription. And she said, but I've got to run to an appointment. I'll call you back here in a bit. So I didn't get a call back. Actually, I did, but I missed it. And then she said, I'm going to send you an email on My Health. So I check it. It says, hey, I'm going to prescribe this. So now I'm like, okay, so can I pick it up? So I call. And so the people in Long Beach, they look up what's happened to me today and blah, blah, blah. They said, oh, yeah, the prescription isn't ready because it's just going into the system. But we have a drive-up window that you can where they will come and bring it to you out in the parking lot. I said, really? So it's now 3:30. I said, so what time does it close? And they said, it closes at 4:30. Okay, so Costa Mesa to Long Beach at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. That's 90 minutes to go 20 miles. It's at least an hour. No kidding. So the beauty, one of the silver linings of all of this is I get in my car and it's a 21-minute trip. I'm there in like 18 minutes. That's right. There's no traffic. It's a sight you'll never see in your life. I pull in. There's a tent out in front of the main entrance, and they're doing COVID-19 screening. So I kind of pull. Right, there's all these there's might have been 4 cars lined up in that line. I don't know if all of them were there for testing, but anyway, so I pull kind of past the cars and I roll my window down and I said, "Hey, where's the pharmacy pickup?" So a guy comes over, he's all masked up, he's got the shield on, and he says, "You go down there, see that parking lot?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Pull in there and pull all the way to the far end, and pull in one of the stalls. They're numbered." And then there's a phone number on the sign at the front of the stall. Call that number. I said, okay. So Colleen and I, we drive down there. We pull in, and I call, and the pharmacy answers. And they said, what stall are you in? And I said, I'm in stall number 4. So it's like 4:20 now. And they said, okay, we're going to get your prescription ready. It might take as many as 30 minutes. I said, okay. So now I look at Colleen, and there's no other cars in these number stalls, just us. And I said, Colleen, this prescription will be out here in the next 5 minutes. And Colleen says, she said 30 minutes. I said, Colleen, these are federal employees. It's going to look like the scene in Field of Dreams when all the cars line up as soon as it hits 4:30 here. She's like, what do you do? I said, Colleen, watch. When they say work's done, watch this. Okay? So we're just sitting there talking, listening to music. All of a sudden, She sees a guy with another face shield all on come out the door. She starts laughing. She goes, "You're right." So this guy, former Marine, comes out, and he's got a U.S. Marine Corps keychain around his neck. And he comes out and goes, "Are you Mr. McNamara?" I said, "I am." So he says, "Any questions about this?" And I said, "I just swallow it, right?" And he said, he starts laughing. He goes, "Yep." Follow the directions. And I said, "Marine?" And he said, "Yes, sir." And I said, "Semper Fidelis." Now, what is your instinct? Right? Fist bump, right? So we elbow bumped. "Yeah, sorry. Social distancing." But I had my mask on, right? I had my mask on. And he had his shield on, so I think we're good. And then got in, you know, never got out of the car. Stayed in the car and then drove home. All in less than an hour. Actually, we went to Home Depot to get a rat trap. Yeah. Yesterday, Jack Russell, the ratter, corners a rat in the backyard under some wood against the fence in the far corner of the yard. Now, Jack is a bit of a crazy dog. He's like the mellowest, easygoing dog until the blood beast in him is aroused, and then he's crazy, right? He's like legitimately out of his mind dog, and that's one of the things I love about him. Okay, Jack is so Colleen says, "Dad, Jack has something cornered." So I see Jack's like, he's like in a high state of agitation. His tail is going like a rattlesnake, right? I move the wood, and Jack goes to eat the rat. Colleen screams, "No!" So I move Jack out of the way, right, and kill the rat. And so Colleen says, "How did you kill it?" So she says, "I can't watch it." So then she says, "How did you kill it?" I said, "Well, I took the shovel, and I pinned him against a wall, and I squished him. I crushed him." And she goes, "Oh, my God." I'm like, "Colleen, they're not good." My next-door neighbor, Rick, the one who hates Donald Trump, right, who I told, "Yeah, but he hasn't got 58,000 guys killed, right? I mean, is your definition, were those guys good presidents?" Yeah, that moderately awkward moment I had with my neighbor. And like I said, I'm not a Donald Trump defender, but again, I'm over the fact that you got to be a nice guy to be a good president, right? I know people in the construction industry that tell me what a piece of shit Donald Trump is, and they know. And he might be. All I know is he stood up to China. He's made NATO, you know, pay their stuff. And he can be, as a human being, he can be as flawed as fuck. That's not a requirement to be a good president. And if you don't think that the things he's done have spurred the economy, I think you're crazy. It's the same thing as when I didn't like, you know, I didn't particularly care for Bill Clinton. But if you couldn't say, "Hey, man, that guy's, as a politician, guy's a snake charmer." If you can't admit things that are true. And so to me, we don't need a nice guy as president. We need somebody who can make the economy go right and fight for a rules-based order around the world. Because that's what makes our economy go. Speaking of our economy, oh, anyway, to finish the story, yeah, Rick tells me next door, the A-4 pilot from Vietnam, he tells me, United States Navy, he tells me that a rat got into his wife's car two nights ago. Yeah, $1,500 worth of damage as the rat tried to get out. Now, I had farmers in North Dakota tell me that stuff, that they would get mice, you know, the car would be warmer than the rest of the garage or the rest of the barn that the car's in, and the rats would infest or the mice would infest the car and just annihilate it. Wires, you know, the rubber round wires, you know, upholstery, you name it. So anyway, yeah, $1,500 worth of damage to his wife's car. A nice new car too. Anyway, so I want to talk about the beauty of capitalism. I think one of the cool things that we're all going to see is what makes America and what has always made the United States a really cool place to live. we're about to all witness why capitalism is the best system, right? And that is the it provides for innovation and creativity. And if you can thread that needle, then you will be rewarded. And there are small businesses and there are entrepreneurs all over the country. There are big businesses and giant corporations who are trying to thread the needle of how do we do this in all varieties. How do I create an application for restaurants? How do I that helps them order so that waiters don't have to get as close? How do I do something that impacts supermarkets? How do I do something that impacts, you know, the retail industry at large? How do I do this? And so to me, what you're going to see, and you're going to see 50 different versions of it, as well it should be. And honestly, that's the way it should have been going into this, right? Except nobody really knew what to do. So, and I think there are federal things that the federal government controls, which is access into the nation, which once we go down this road ever again, that ought to be, you know, for instance, if Italy has a flare up, and this is the hard part, you can't come here if you've been in Italy. How do you track that? How do you track somebody who's been in Italy if they fly to London and then from London they fly, you know, in? So I don't know. I'm sure there should be a way to do that, but that's the purview of the federal government. Beyond that, I think it's the federal government, you know, working with, what do we call it overseas, by, with, and through, the governors of the states. That's their job. And so I think it should have been that way at the get-go, but it wasn't. And then, but coming out of it will be. And you're going to see states do it well. You're going to see states do it poorly and have to recock this thing. And get after it again. I think, though, that the president's and his task force's staff, and then the subsequent remarks made by state governors, it all gives people a sense that this is going to come to a close. And in certain parts of the country, there are going to be people that can go back to to work. Now, I saw this term, physical distance, socially interactive, and I like that. Physical distance, socially interactive, PDSI. And to me, that makes sense. And I saw somebody talking about, look, you're going to see baseball, basketball, hockey figure this stuff out in the short term. And what's going to happen is for a while they will play to empty venues. And then what's going to happen is every stadium's going to submit a venue plan, whether it's, you know, we're going to sell blocks of seats, right, of people that will come together. It's just like if you were going out to dinner together, that you're confident that nobody in that group is infected. And so we're going to have rows. Those groups are going to be separated by three seats. There's going to be nobody in front of you, and there's going to be nobody behind you. So it would be every other row in the stadium. So you're going to have 6 feet between you, or every third row in the stadium, something like that. And then your group is going to be separated laterally from a group, you know. And so everybody's going to have to wear a mask in public, right? And so you're going to see people come up with those, and then public health people say, that's reasonable, okay? And it's just not relative to sports. But again, I just, you know, if I was a business owner, and I'll tell you what, I drove down a major drag here. You know, sporting goods stores open in California, paint stores open in California. You know, a lot more businesses have said, hey, I'm going to open, and I may not be on the list, because I can't imagine all those businesses were on the list. But anyway, to me, what you're going to see is the greatest economic system in the planet, and what it does best, which is innovate. And we're going to find a way, the United States is going to find a way to be safe and to social distance while you're in physical proximity. And I think we're going to find a way to do that. And nobody else can do it like the United States. because of our economy, because of our resources, and because of our culture of innovation. So I think it's yesterday was a good deal. I think it gave a lot of – I mean, I was relieved to see it, certainly. And I've been critical that, you know, this – you know, and you've heard – if you listened to Tim Lynch yesterday, if you ultimately – when you look at the numbers, right, what you're going to see is an overreaction to this thing. And I was watching the news last night, and they said, well, the model that predicted, right – 1 to 2 million, if nothing's 2 million, if nothing's done, and then what? 10 days ago, the model said 200,000. That's where we were headed. You know, when Governor Cuomo was on doing his Chicken Little event, right? Now we're talking about what, 68,000? They said, and I saw the guy who owns that model yesterday, and he said that number's coming down either yesterday or today. And the question was, if it comes down to below the annual level of the flu, can we say that this was an overreaction? Which is what Tim and Jeff would say. And then you have a discussion about that. And the discussion centers around, it's only there because of the mitigation, the drastic mitigation that was done, which probably point valid, right? But anyway, you know, yesterday was a good day. And again, to me, it is on. It's interesting. If you look at any news aggregator, any website that aggregates news, what do you think is the top of every the one word that's the top of everything? Trump. Yeah, Trump, 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 Trump. So anyway, and you're seeing a variation of the president kind of wusses out of opening the nation. He hands it to the governors, right? So, and if the headline would have been if he said I'm gonna reopen the country all at once, it would have been, you know, president oversteps his constitutional authority. So it's just, you know, it's this stupid game that goes on in our media. But to me, it should be the governors. That's what they get elected to. It should be the people of those states. And I saw, if you watched the press briefing yesterday and you looked at the charts that Dr. Burt put up, and you saw their kind of stoplight charts, red, green, yellow, right? And, I mean, you see a lot of the country is green. And there's like three different shades of green, right? What's her name? B-I-R-T? Damn it. Bricks. There she is. But the charts, the charts she put up yesterday are the ones I'm looking for. And her name's spelled B-I-R-X. Come on. Who spells a name like that? Anyway, it was just a map of the United States, and every state's colored, you know, red, yellow, green, and a different shade of each. Maybe if I put in the date, April 16th. And I'm still not getting that. All right, whatever. Not making me happy. So, but if you look at that, I mean, it should be a state responsibility. So, anyway, there's a couple stories I want to talk about. The chef's going to come on here in about 18 minutes, and we're going to talk to the chef about, are they called fajitas? Frittatas, something like that. Wall Street Journal story. I have to tell you this. The Wall Street Journal's too expensive, okay? But I will say this about it. in my opinion, they're the best news service in the world. They write more pieces of substance and do more quality work and break more news than any other newspaper that I see out there. So I would, if you see one of those special deals, like you can buy it for a dollar for 2 months, buy it. There's also Dan LaMoth wrote a pretty interesting piece yesterday in the Washington Post. He somehow or other got access to the actual email as well as the attachment. Now, it was only the attachment that appeared in the media. So it's kind of interesting. From the Wall Street Journal, headline, USS Theodore Roosevelt outbreak is linked to flight crews, not the Vietnam visit. So we kind of followed that. So interesting. Another reason to hate aviators, right? So like if the world needed more reasons to hate aviators, which we don't, because we all should feel compassion because they're a dying breed. Their job will be taken over by robots. Exactly. So anyway, the origin of the coronavirus aboard the USS Theodore Roosevelt started in the air wing, not in sailors that are ship's company that were off the boat doing stuff in Da Nang. So what they believe is sailors who fly on what's called COD. Yeah, and I wish I could remember the name for COD, but they fly. So when you're in the Pacific, you know, for the first couple of days, your CODs fly back to San Diego. They pick up mail. They pick up people. You know, they bring them out to the ship. They take stuff back, right? And they used to be E2Cs. Now they're E2 something else. So they're called CODs. I'm looking for the term. As they left Vietnam, right, they're flying in and out of the Philippines. They're flying in and out of Guam and Japan on these COD trips. Yeah, so somebody got it on one of those stops and brought it back to the ship. So that from the Wall Street Journal. The story that Dan LaMoth wrote, who's been on the program here a number of times. The headline is, How an Outbreak on the Theodore Roosevelt Became a Defining Moment for the U.S. Military. I don't know if it's a defining moment. It certainly is an attention grabber, but I think defining moment, it defines the U.S. military. It really doesn't. My quarrel with headline writers around the country. So anyway, again, clickbait, right? But the substance of the article, Dan, I mean, the piece is outstanding. So he gets a hold of the actual email. Captain Brett Crozier opened his March 30th message to three admirals by saying he would gladly follow them into battle whenever needed. But he shifted into his concern that the Navy was not doing enough to stop the spread of the virus and acknowledged being part of the sluggish response. Quote, I fully realize that I bear responsibility for not demanding more decisive action the moment we pulled in. But at this point, my only priority is the continued well-being of the crew and the embarked staff. Now, none of this has been previously published before the Post put it up. The email goes on. I believe if there is ever a time to ask for help, it is now, regardless of the impact on my career. The email, copied to a handful of Navy captains, is at the heart of the crisis that erupted into public view after a four-page memo attached to it was published in the news media. Now, the question is, how did the memo get to the news media? While the attachment circulated widely in the media, the email did not. The email shows that Modley mischaracterized the message, accusing Crozier of sending it to 20 to 30 people, as he cited it as justification for removing him for command. And then he goes on to, in the article, to put together emails, text messages from families, blah, 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 blah. Right? So there's six more sailors hospitalized. They've had one fatality. He's been identified today as a chief. And then the consistent headline that we see about this on a daily basis is the fact that he could be reinstated. And we were talking yesterday. I don't know if he's right and what he did was right, then the people above him have to either resign or be relieved because they didn't move fast enough. And this guy's falling on his sword. The question of how it got to the media is another question. And so I don't think they, like we were talking yesterday, I don't think they can both be right. I don't think we can say, okay, we screwed this up. He's going to go back and be the CEO, and we're all going to try harder next time. Right? We're all going to try harder next time. So anyway, let me open the show. Whitney Houston, I have to do it. Whitney Houston sings the national anthem. It is Friday. Good morning to you. This is dedicated to the people up at the Long Beach VA. The VA takes a lot of criticism, but I will tell you what, they were awesome yesterday and helped me. So thank you very much. And I was impressed with what I saw yesterday. So well done. Well done, boys and girls.
You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
All right, we'll check the weather. I found the chart. Yeah, how excited am I? Actually, I went to the YouTube video of the press briefing yesterday. And I found the spot in the video, and I hit pause. Okay, so time for us to check the weather real quick. Currently in Quantico, partly sunny in 56. Camp Lejeune, sunny in 70. 29 Palms, sunny in 65. Pendleton, partly sunny 56. Camp Smith in Hawaii, dark cloudy and 68. 71 yesterday at this time. Okinawa, dark cloudy in 69. Lashkar Gah, early in the evening, it is clear dark in 65. And Ramadi, cloudy in 81, late in the afternoon. Currently, it is partly cloudy in 60. Looking for a high of 65 today. 65 in rain tomorrow. And 66 under partly cloudy skies on Sunday. That is a look at your weather. Shithole weather from Jeff. Or it says Jeffrey. Come on, man. Nobody's short in that stuff. Good morning, Mac. We're currently sitting at 39 degrees in Acushnet, Massachusetts, with a projected high of 50. Exclamation mark, no less. It is currently sunny but turning partly cloudy later in the day. Winds are out of the west-southwest at 15 to 25. Tonight, 100% chance of rain, which is supposed to have a mix of snow. Low around 34. Snow, question mark, what the fuck? Anyway, I guess I will take my motorcycle out for a ride while the sun is shining. Enjoy your weekend. He's got a Ducati bike. There's a picture of it. Yeah, an Italian bike. Be careful with those things. From Churchbridge, Saskatchewan. Good morning, Mac. The snow is slowly melting thanks to a return to normal April highs. A mix of sun and clouds with southwest winds at 15 for today. Current temperature's 30. Feels like 21. Afternoon high, 54. Yeah, this is from the place that like goes 30 below and shit. A 27-degree rise since Tuesday. Yes, the rope lights remain on the deck railing year-round. No, that's not acceptable, Bev. I'm sorry. You cannot have your Christmas decorations up year-round. Now, the only way you could do it is if there's a way that you could take the red out of there, you could keep the white up. But if it's red and white, everybody knows it's Christmas. That shit's got to come down. Okay, now I want to talk about what the map of the country looks like. Okay, so it's weird. Purple is at the top of the chart, right? That's beyond red. So it goes like light red, red, maroon, and purple. There's two states. Actually, there's three. Okay, Louisiana, New York, and New Jersey are all purple. No, New York's not even purple. New York is maroon. Massachusetts is maroon. Connecticut is maroon. Pennsylvania is red. Virginia is orange. South Carolina, Georgia are red. So, and then you have Oklahoma. You have Oklahoma and Nebraska are maroon and red. Everything else west of the Mississippi is is yellow or green. And so you have large parts of the country that aren't impacted by this. So anyhow, I think it's an encouraging picture to look at when you see the country. And I think that in most of the countries, there's a lot of businesses that can be operating. And they should be operating, is my point. They should be operating. So anyway, let me just go over the top five stories in Early Bird, and we'll take a break, and then we'll get the chef on. Top five stories in Early Bird. One, regardless of the impact of my career, this is the Washington Post story. Crozier's email reveals Navy won't rule out reinstatement. So it'll be interesting how the Navy tries to thread this thing. I mean, if you can reinstate him and absolve the people above him, you know, if you can somehow or other absolve him from somehow this thing getting into the public, then you can reinstate him. I just don't see how you do it and send the wrong message to any commanding officer that you can fire off something like this, not using secure, you know, message modes, and survive it. No matter how many guys were out there singing, can't do that. And let me just, I'll read you a little bit of the article, and then we'll go. Friends of Crozier have described him as calm and unlikely to have sent the message unless he thought it was necessary. Medical staff on a ship warned that if they didn't get the virus under control quickly, dozens of sailors could die. Again, the Chicken Little piece, right? And we've seen Governor Cuomo do that, all right? We're all going down this road, right? We're all going down this road. Well, guess what? He didn't even go down that road, for God's sakes. Dozens of sailors would die, a detailed first reported by the New York Times. Crozier's friends have said that the captain pushed send after several days of the Navy struggling to settle on a plan that would remove sailors quickly. A senior defense official acknowledged that Crozier wanted to remove sailors more quickly, but that his effort wasn't immediately realistic. Quote, the problem was there was no place to put them at the time. The governor of Guam had started working with the hotel industry to get the hotels reopened, but that doesn't happen overnight. The official added that if Crozier wanted to make an urgent point to a commander, the Navy has a way to do so. He could have sent a personal message known colloquially as a P4 to senior service leaders that would have flagged the discussion as sensitive and important without opening up to a relatively large group of people, they said. So anyway, not moving quick enough for the captain of the ship, which is normal. What's not normal is the way he went about it. So we'll see how the Navy threads all that. All right, number two, canceled spring break. Troops can now carry over up to 120 days leave this year thanks to COVID-19 travel ban. So what happens is, I believe you're maxed at accumulating leave at 120 days. So what that means is over the course of your career, you're allowed 30 days of leave a year. Well, most people don't take 30 days of leave a year. You know, you might get a week at Christmas, a week during the summer, and so you accumulate the rest. Well, over years, that stuff piles up. And so they put in the law that said you can't accumulate more than 120 days. Well, now they're saying that you can because of coronavirus. Number three, first COVID cases among U.S. troops is virus-free in 49-day isolation. So this is a story about the soldier in South Korea who was one of the first to contract coronavirus. He's now virus-free. The U.S. Navy identified the sailor who died on the Roosevelt, and he's from Arkansas. His name is Chief Petty Officer Robert Thacker, and died at Naval Hospital in Guam. He's a native of Fort Smith, Arkansas. I'm looking to see Thacker's spouse, who is also on active duty, stationed in San Diego, has flown to Guam to be at his side. So anyway, our thoughts and prayers are with her and their family. Number five, SecDef. It is a big story, right? Because of that email. U.S. Inspector General for Afghanistan says problems it identified aren't being addressed. Now, what are those problems? And this is why, like, the Al-Marine Radio perspective on Afghanistan went from cautiously pessimistic to straight pessimistic. So in hearings a couple months ago, a guy by the name of John Sopko, who's a special inspector general for Afghan reconstruction, right, had a series of recommendations, things that weren't happening. And now he's come back and said, yeah, everything I said, none of it's being fixed. All right. So anyway, that's in the news. We're going to take a break, and then we'll get the chef in here. So don't touch that dial. More of Al-Marine Radio coming up next on a Friday right here on your home for it, the All-Warrior Radio Network.